It's the end of the Fed's stimulus program. Has it done any good?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The Federal Reserve's bond buying program, known as QE2, Quantitative Easing 2, ends today. The Fed started purchasing lots of U.S. debt after the financial crisis hit, spending more than $500 million buying up IOUs from the federal government. The thinking was that would spur growth in the U.S. economy. And critics say, yeah, there was growth all right. It happened outside the U.S. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is with us live from Washington with more on that. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Steve.
So did the program work as advertised?
Depends who you talk to. Reviews are pretty mixed. QE2 essentially took bonds out of the hands of investors. They had to look for other places to put their money. Some went into stocks, and markets are up from last year. But those investors also bid up the price of commodities like oil and grain, and that trickled down to consumers. You and I had to pay more for gas and food. Stephen Lewis is chief economist at Monument Securities. I asked him how the global economy was affected by QE2.
Other countries also have suffered from the impact of the rise in commodity prices on their consumers' real incomes. So there's the same balance playing out in all the other advanced economies.
So what happens now, Nancy? Without this, is a slowdown coming?
Not necessarily. Some economists, like Stephen Lewis, say bond voyage. You like that, Steve?
Yeah.
They're really glad that it's over. They think the higher prices we mentioned outweighed any positive effects from the Fed's cash injection. But look, it's not like the Fed is going to stop buying treasuries altogether. It just won't be buying as many as it did during QE2.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, the pun master herself, joining us from Washington. Thanks, Nancy. Today, bullet trains begin running in China from Beijing to Shanghai in what is now the longest high-speed rail network in the world. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz compares the Chinese lines to what we have going on here in the U.S.
So let's say you live in Chicago and you want to take the Amtrak to New York. If the train's on time, it'll take you 18 hours. Beijing to Shanghai is around the same distance. On the new bullet train, that's a 5-hour trip. Just like with everything else these days, China's faster.
China understands correctly that you need to make a big investment in sustainable transportation if you're going to be competitive in the 21st century.
Robert Cruickshank writes the California High-Speed Rail blog.
Here in the U.S., we're simply not willing to go ahead and make that investment, or at least our Congress isn't, without realizing that if you don't invest in the future, well, you're not going to have one.
The U.S. government has set aside $7 billion for high-speed rail. China's central government has invested $309 billion. It's taken China around 5 years to build that network. Cruickshank says funding problems and environmental regulations mean a 15 to 20-year wait in the U.S. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are higher right now. Social network MySpace meets social network movie star Justin Timberlake. Timberlake may have starred in the movie about Facebook, but he's now part of a company that bought MySpace from News Corp yesterday for $35 million. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow rose 72 points to close at 12,261.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, protecting online privacy by removing your personal data from the internet and stopping unwanted mail. Reputation.com. And by MassMutual, offering business owners financial guidance for the long term. Information at MassMutual.com. Coverage of the economy is supported in part by the Schuman Center for Media and Democracy.
The government's about to start handing over billions of dollars in cheap money to smaller community banks, a way Uncle Sam says to start and jumpstart lending to small businesses. Critics are calling it son of TARP. And as Marketplace's Bob Moon reports, some experts want to know why bailed out banks are lining up for another bailout.
Small businesses keep complaining that stubborn banks are holding back the recovery, making it hard to borrow startup funding or money for inventory or payroll. So lawmakers came up with a plan that sounded straightforward.
Bolster the capital available to community banks so that they can then lend to small businesses.
That seemingly simple plan, outlined by Republican Sam Graves, who chairs the House Small Business Committee, has gotten complicated. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner was on Capitol Hill last week trying to explain why only a third of the $30 billion available has been requested by the banks.
We do not have the capacity, and the program does not give us the ability to force banks to lend.
Critics say the program is flawed. They say the way it's set up is most beneficial to hundreds of small banks already on the hook for money from the big Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP. They can quietly use this money to get out from under the stigma and tough restrictions of the first bailout.
It looks like almost every single one of those TARP banks that could possibly qualify for the program have applied.
NYU Professor Neil Barofsky is the former Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. He says if the banks repay their TARP debt now through this more favorable government program, taxpayers get the short end of the deal. The banks contend their borrowing costs only go down if they boost their small business lending by at least 10%. But Barofsky points out the supposed incentive is actually retroactive to last year.
For the TARP bank that just naturally increased lending as a result of the economic recovery, for having done nothing other than enjoying the benefits of TARP money and their normal course of business, they're going to get a huge windfall reduction in what they have to pay the government, which is just not good from a taxpayer perspective.
Professor Linus Wilson has studied this issue at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. He says government leaders have special motivation to move banks out of the controversial TARP bailout.
It'll make the numbers of the TARP look a lot better than it really is.
Wilson says they can claim a lot more banks emerge successfully from TARP, even if those troubled banks really just switch to another kind of government aid. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
And finally, the New York Times has an in-depth expose on home paint today and all the new and different names that paint companies are giving their colors for added splash. For example, Valspar now sells one shade of orange it calls Weekend in the Country. Benjamin Moore sells Rendezvous Bay, which looks a lot like turquoise. And even helpful hardware store Ace has gotten in on the act with a beige color known as Hey There, or as I like to call it, paint. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
At the Aspen Ideas Festival, experts air their savvy on global issues, but Aspen's a two-sided town.
One for people who are there for pleasure, for relaxation and rest and recreation, for, you know, the Aspen Music Festival, the Food and Wine Classic, those sorts of things. And there's another Aspen for people whose labor makes that all possible.
I'm Bob Moon. Dual Aspens, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.